Key will call the roll call if we can.
Good morning, everyone. I didn't have any sound, but I do now. Good morning, it's C-Rock. Let's go ahead and call the roll. Chair Bell.
Present.
Regent Barfall. Regent Brinkley.
Present.
Regent Henson.
Present.
Regent McKinney.
Present.
Vice Chair Milliken.
Here.
Regent Nichols.
Here.
Regent Spiller.
Here.
Regent Thomas.
Present.
Secretary West, I'm here, and then Regent Winter.
Present.
All right. Mr. Chair, we have 12 regents present, which represents a quorum of the board.
Okay. Well, I think we have 10 out of 11, actually.
All right.
So, that's all right. And we were sent minutes of our March 4th meeting electronically. Hopefully everyone has had a chance to review those. And if so, I'll entertain a motion to approve those minutes.
I so moved.
Motion, Regent Thomas.
Second.
Second, Regent Milliken. Any discussion, comments, corrections? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, like, sign. Minutes are approved. We'll go directly into academic affairs and keep Regent West on the hot seat.
All right, thank you. At our committee meeting, we had a discussion and the committee approved the supply chain management graduate certificate. And I was, is Provost Fisher there today?
Yes.
Oh, hi. Provost Fisher, do you want to go ahead and speak to that? Do you have anything further to add?
No, I would say that we're asking for approval of it. And Chris Shook, the dean of the business college, is here, and I would like for him to speak about it.
Good morning, ladies. I just want to remind you this is a key part of our strategy going forward. It helps us with adult ed, continuing ed, and it also is a key part of the MBA strategy going forward in modularity, the plug and play, so that people get the exact degree they want. And as just a reminder, the way we determined we needed this degree was we went out to the community and did some surveying, and this is highly needed by the local industry. Since our last meeting, I do want to mention that we have appointed Dr. Dana Cosby as the Dean for Graduate Programs and Outreach, which will help us consolidate and get synergy amongst all the graduate programs and enhance our opportunities for outreach to the local businesses. And I'm happy to answer any further questions if you have them.
I would add that I was with Envisions in the last week and a half, and this was at the top of their list of what they needed as we move forward with the new battery plant. So they are excited about this, and they're waiting for the first graduate or the first people with certificates.
Great. That sounds good. Anybody else have any other questions or comments?
I would just as a general question, I've said this over the last couple of months. As you know, I'm a huge proponent of us expanding our structure and outreach and results in graduate education. And this, I know we're starting a review process for our undergraduate programs. Are we going to be looking at our graduate programs over that review process as well?
We will.
So will we have goals for the number of students we expect to see in these programs?
We will. So and when we run the sustainability, what will happen is people who have some or are identified as needing some help, we will have that. They will develop a three-year plan. They will tell us numbers, and we will help them move that three-year plan.
Okay. Anything further? Great. Do I have a motion to approve the graduate certificate in supply chain management?
So moved.
Second.
Okay. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes. And we had a second action item on the agenda, which is the approval of a maritime appointment for, we've got two emeritus appointments that we're looking at, Dr. James Beery and Dr. LaDonna Hutton. Provost Fisher, do you have anything?
I do. I'd like to share a little bit about each one of them before we approve or not approve, whatever you choose. So Dr. Gary began his academic, and I would ask him to please stand up. He's in the room today. Dr. Gary began his academic career at WKU in 1998. He served in various roles, including department chair, and taught a wide variety of courses in support of the programs that were found in engineering and applied sciences. We thank you for all your time here, and we thank you for all your efforts, and I'd like to give him a round of applause. He did a great job. The second person is Dr. LaDonna Hutton. She was the Associate Vice President in the Provost Office. It was the first person I believe I met with as I came here, and we had an interesting conversation about budgets. She began her career at WKU in 2000. She served as Academic Budget and Accounting Analyst Manager for Academic Budgets until 2011, and Director of Academic Resource Allocation until 2012, and then Associate Vice President for Academic Budgets and Administration until her retirement in 2021. In addition, she served as a part-time faculty member and provided her expertise for several committees. And I can say personally that what she handed me the first day that I walked on campus has been integral to being me, myself, understanding the budget and being able to help with moving the budget forward. And with that, I'd love to thank her.
All right. Thank you very much, Provost Fisher. It's really good to have Dr. Beery, Dr. Hutton with us so that we can put a face to the name and when we are discussing all of your accomplishments. So we appreciate you all being here today. Are there any further questions or comments? Then we will move forward. Do we have a motion for approval of AmeriPass status awarded for Dr. James Beery and Dr. LaDonna Hutton?
So moved.
Second.
Second. Okay. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Okay. Very good. The motion passes. And Chair Bale, I believe that's all the business we have for the
Chair Bale, yeah. I wanted to make some, there was a few changes that I needed to make related to continuance, tenure, and promotion summary on page 22 that you were supplied. If I could. Those came up just yesterday, and as we were looking at the material again, and there's three corrections. Aaron Marganella is being promoted to associate professor and tenured in the School of Teacher Education. It is in, I believe, the wrong school in there. Ozkin Ozar is being tenured in the Department of Mathematics and is promoted to associate professor last year and is not being promoted to professor in this cycle, so just being tenured. And Kelly Reins is a professor in the Department of English, not in history. So those would be the three changes as you move forward.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
And I'd like to thank our recipients. Dr. Gary slipped away already. It's very nice for us to have our emeriti people present so that we can actually see faces and we recognize that outstanding faculty and staff are what makes Western what it is, and we know how important they are to the success of our university. So thank you for being here, Dr. Gary.
Mr. Chair, before we move on, just real quick, Provost, yesterday you sent a wonderful message to campus. Now that you have the floor, if you'd like to say anything, because I believe we're at a tremendous day in WKU history, all that we've come through the last 2 years.
Yeah, if you haven't seen it, I wrote a short, but I hope touching, which is rare for me. And what I was really interested in and what I wanted to say was exactly what you did, Chair Bale, which is I thought the faculty and staff have done an incredible job over a two-year period to keep this institution moving in a direction for what it's really supposed to do, which is student success. That is to graduate students and to be able to get them the skill set and knowledge set that they need to be able to move forward. And, you know, we've gone through a pandemic, we've gone through a tornado, and you can go on and on and on, and we came out the other end, I think, better as an institution. And because of that, I thought we needed to tell everybody that that's what really happened. And I think that I'm just proud of what everybody's been able to do at this place. And I've only been here a year, so I've not been here the 2 years, but it's been great.
This might also be a good time, Chair West, to point out the recent success since our last meeting of our forensics team and our photojournalism people.
Forensics has won just, well, what am I kidding? They've won every tournament they've been in, and they won a national championship again, which they are absolutely amazing, especially since if you look at who they're beating North Carolina, they're beating all of the Big Ten, they're beating all across the country. So they are by far the best team, I would say, on this campus. How's that? And in the, on the other side of the coin, what was the other?
Photojournalism
won a ton of prizes. And it wasn't just a individual awards. What I thought was the best part of it was is that it was an overall award for the whole program. And that's a really important. And that, again, was against a huge number of photojournalism programs across the country. And it's been amazing. And you will see later on, the Concrete Canoe people will be here. And, you know, the fact that they can actually get concrete to float is worth millions to me. So that's something
I've said before, but I think we're the only university in Kentucky that can claim to be number one in academic programs. And
that's important.
We should all crow a little bit about that.
Yes. Anyway.
I will touch on that some more in my president's report during the executive.
Right.
Thank you.
We can't talk about it enough. We
cannot.
All right. Thank you very much, Chair West. And we will move to finance and budget. Chair McKinney survived another 15. Sorry, I wasn't here at the last meeting. We understood it. Bad time. Got two items on our agenda today. The first being FB1, approval of personnel action. You got anything? Just want to talk about that? All right. Do I have a motion to approve the personnel action?
Second.
All right. Second. Thank you. Anybody have any discussion or questions on this side? None. I'll call for a vote. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, like sign. All right. FB1 passes. The next is the FB2, approval of the budget versus actual. Nothing else to comment on that? Okay. Do I hear a motion to approve FB2?
So moved.
George?
Second.
Thank you, George. Any discussion or questions?
I just want to comment again. The team, the fact that we did it soon enough, we have an opportunity to discuss things. I think it's wonderful. I really think that, Sue, you've done a great job at providing us with information. As we've gone through all of the financial discussion, we're going to have.
All right. All in favor of FB2? Signify by saying
aye.
Aye. All opposed? Like sign? All right, FB2 passes. So the next items on our agenda are the information items.
Jeff, can you pull up the
here
we go.
Okay.
Thank you. So we just wanted to talk a little bit about the compensation study that was recently completed and implemented the first phase of that. I'm going to talk directly about the staff, and then I'm going to turn it over to our provost to talk about the faculty part of it. So on the staff side, phase one objective, just to remind you, I'll go kind of to the second bullet. There was a 2% salary increase pool approved as part of the current year budget. We distributed 1.5% of that in January, and we hope that the additional 0.5% to once the compensation study was complete, to start addressing the most egregious salary problems across campus. So that was phase one, and that's what we did. We implemented that in April. So the initial pay target for our study is 90% of market. And I know I have conversations with my HR folks about this, but I don't want anyone to think, to come away from this, that we would love to have a target of 90% of the upper pay band, but the current target is 90% of the, let's think of it this way, of the midpoint of the salary band. So the adjustment parameters, so what we did is we looked at all of those folks below minimum. We considered those to be the most egregious salary problems. And what we did is we set a maximum of $10,000. So there were a few staff on campus that were way below minimum, upwards to $20,000. So they got $10,000. We capped it at $10,000. And then there were some staff that were, let's say, $21 below minimum. So we didn't want to just give someone a $21 pay adjustment. So we set the minimum threshold at $1,000. We excluded grant-funded positions. They have to basically, this was for ENG positions only, and then also revenue-dependent were excluded. So this was, these are kind of some facts about the staff. So there were 1,042 staff incumbents that their salaries were reviewed. 119 of those were identified as below minimum. 82 of those, of the 119, 82 received an increase. And what we did is we also factored in, so the census date when we pulled the salary data was August of last year. So what we did was we factored in the 1.5% salary adjustment that we made in January. So that's really all I have on the staff. We're still working through what the next phases of the adjustments will be, working with leadership, HR, and basically campus. So, Bud, you want to cover faculty?
Sure.
Great. So lots of similar with faculty. So what we did is got the list, and what we did is follow the same protocols as we were just talking about, and I just want to talk about the bottom a little bit. We looked at 642 faculty who fell into the compensation model. What we did was we first made sure the data was right. That was sent, and I thank everybody on my team who spent a significant amount of time looking at it to make sure that the SIP codes were right, making sure they had the right titles, making sure they had the right amount of money associated with them, and making sure that we were ready to move forward. We then, knowing 642, looked and took the money that we had, which was the 0.5% that went to the faculty, which was about $380,000, and we then divvied the $380,000 up with a maximum of $10,000 and a minimum of $1,000. At that point, what we saw is that there were 86 identified below minimum. So we had 86 faculty below the minimum, and the minimum was set at 80%. And what we were able to do was move 80 of those individuals over that 80% threshold. And because of the 1.5% increase, when we ran it, what we were also able to do is move a little past the 80% threshold. So when we ran it and we had $380,000, we had a savings, and what we did was take that savings and put it back into the faculty and got them to somewhere around 81%. So trying to move the people who were the most egregiously out of line to where that we felt they needed to be. And that's the first part. As Susan said, the second part will be dealing with the 2% in the future, and the 2% will be done with Susan, I, and the teams, as well as the OAC and BAC, which are the budget committees, so that everybody's represented as we figure out how to move forward and take care of some of the other things that are out there, like compression, inversion, and those types of things. So if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer.
Yeah,
sure.
First, I'd like to recognize that, you know, this is the, I wouldn't say the end, this is a major step in a long process that started a long time ago. And I think as this has been presented across campus, everyone has been happy to hear about it and step along that process.
Sure.
I think there's still some concern about some of the bands.
Absolutely.
And there's still some concern about what those next steps might be. And the provost just mentioned compensation along with dealing with compression and inversion. And as those of you know, I've brought this up a few times at this board, issues. And I think it's a strategic issue that we have on this campus that, that causes us to have problems with our strategic plan. And I would just like to address that with you just in a little bit, that we imagine you hire new doctors who make more money than the senior doctors, or you hire new accountants and they make more money than the senior accountants, or lawyers, and we tell the senior lawyers, accountants, or doctors that, okay, if you want to get raises, you've got to go out and do more work. You've got to see more clients. You've got to do more billings. You've got to do more billable hours. And they do those things. And then we use that money to hire more junior lawyers, accountants, or doctors at salaries that are higher than what the senior people are. And then what's going on campus right now is a little bit of confusion of how is this problem going to be addressed, if it's going to come from central administration or if it's going to be done in the units where we're asking them to be innovative and address these issues. Lately, the messaging at those units has been, we're tired of hearing about it, or if you don't like it, you can, there's the door, you can see the door. Where I'm concerned about this is how this will be a failure in our strategic plan. If we're telling our senior faculty, you're underpaid and we don't care, and we can't fix it, so we're not going to, but yet you've got to do more work, we end up with situations like senior faculty not going out to do recruitment, not doing the things they need to do in their classes, perhaps getting shifted to an online class and then not meeting with those students, and so we're not meeting our goals on engagement or other things. So, you know, this is something that I came to this board incredibly concerned about, not just simply because I'm one of those people. I want to be clear about this. I see senior faculty disengaging, and the messaging, the disconnect between what we want, what we heard about how we were going to address this last October, and now what we're hearing in those units, there's a major disconnect here. We've got to get that cleared up, and we've got to move forward on this.
So I would say that I understand the problems. We certainly have looked at the problems. I mean, this was a 30-year problem that we can't solve in 1 year. That's impossible to do. I also know that I have spent a significant amount of times with a huge number of faculty on this campus to address this. And I have sent, and HR can say, I've sent them a message that there are certainly things that we need to talk about to get ready to be able to talk about the next 2% starting August. And those include exactly what you're talking about, looking at how do you figure out compensation related to inversion and compression, as well as thinking about the bands. Because the ones that I got back, I got the bands are an interesting conversation, and so are instructor bands. And we will take the summer to take a look at that to make sure. The model's just the first start of a model. We have no problem fixing the model or changing the model as we move forward. But at this point, this is the best start we could have, and it was with the people, I believe, that were the most egregiously underpaid on this campus that needed to be moved into a range to be able to now talk about compression and inversion. And that's really where we are at this point. I mean, I totally get it. We all get it. I would tell you that the units don't solve the problem. It comes from what's determined as the raise and those and the distribution. And I think we've gone the right way with adding the BEC and the OAC so that we have huge numbers of faculty and staff on that committee when the decision is made about how to move forward.
Sure. Yeah.
I have a couple of questions, and I'm going to try to make them brief. According to this, you've addressed 80 of the 89 faculty that are below the minimum.
Yes.
What's the correlative number with staff? There was 119 identified. How many have been addressed?
82.
Okay.
82.
Okay. When we talk about the BEC and the OAC,
yep.
My understanding is that those are going to merge over the next 2 years. Totally understand that. No issues with that. Tremendous amount of work has gone into all of this. But I'm curious, when we talk about solutions, why the one of the lead members, I won't say lead member, a member of the BEC, leaves the committee work and pushes for a faculty resolution for $3.2 million to address all of the faculty needs outside of committee, but tries to do it through a faculty senate measure. It seems like there's a disconnect in the purpose of the BEC, on the surface to me. Now, remember, I'm not on the BEC, and I'm not on the faculty senate.
Sure.
I'm trying to understand why a senior faculty member on this campus would try to address that outside of committee through another measure if those measures are supposed to take place in that committee?
So I would answer that by saying that the BEC is the person or the group that can put forward increases in what would be percent increases in pay. And his idea was is that it shouldn't come from the BEC, that it should come from the faculty senate to the BEC who has control of that. And that made that made sense to me, and that is what he did. It didn't come even to me. It's a resolution that went to the BEC to take a look at and see if they could find $3 million. The reason I would tell you that they chose $3 million has to do with the fact that those $3 million gets everybody to the 90% mark.
Gets faculty.
Faculty, yeah. And that was a huge discussion in faculty senate, if you go back, that it wasn't broad enough is what they thought, but they still passed it. But there was certainly a discussion that you can't do one without the other, and that was a discussion.
Quick follow-up. That's okay. Chair. I was troubled a little by something that Shane said, Regent Spiller said, sorry. And I want to just follow up with that because I know the source of that, and I want to make sure that this really didn't take place. Maybe it did. Are either of you aware of a group meeting on this campus where staff were told that if they don't like what's happened related to compensation study, there's the door?
So
I want to be absolutely sure you understand my question.
I do.
Because I do have a source for it. So I just want to make sure the answer is no.
So my answer is no for the faculty. I have answered a huge number of emails telling them that I would look at it and we would be back to them. Yeah. And I have not said anything like that in an open forum, and nor would I ever. So that's my answer for faculty.
And for staff, I've not said that. Been involved.
No, I didn't ask if you'd say it. I know you haven't said it. I know you wouldn't say it. I just want to make sure that you were not aware.
I was not aware. No.
Me okay. Neither.
So just one last follow-up. And then.
Sure.
This adjustments that were made here was about $800,000 or so, right?
Was it was $800,000, yes.
How much money would we need as a goal, just thinking forward, how much do we need to get the faculty and staff to the 90th percentile that you have as a goal with your funding?
So I can only say that it's $3.2 million related to faculty. Because when I run the model, and I had the model, but I didn't bring it in, it shows $3.2 million is needed. So the next jump, if you're trying to get everybody 90%, is a big jump for this institution. And that's a lot of money in a short period of time, and that's where we are. And that wouldn't even take care, in some cases, of the compression that occurs at the top. It would only get the people who are below 90% to 90%, and then we have to still take care of what's the rest of those compression and inversions.
And for staff, it's closer to around $2
million. Okay. So we're looking at
five. And I want to follow up and just say, we understand that this is a multi-year problem. We don't anticipate us all. We've had this discussion openly with each other. Publicly, I want to make sure everybody understands we're not asking for a solution tonight. We know that it's a tremendous amount of work. I've discussed this with HR, with each of you at some level at President, and I understand the complexities of it. It's just sometimes we have to clear up questions related to that or concerns that other people have.
Well, and I would say I totally get it. I think we're good. I think it's the first time. And I would also say I love that the OAC and the BEC will be part of the discussions because I think that gives everybody a buy-in when the decision is made and we move forward. Whatever we try to take care of, compression, inversion, moving to the 90%, whatever that next move is for us.
How do we keep this updated? Because with the current inflation, I mean, this is going to be outdated in 6 months.
Well, it's outdated today already. Who are we kidding?
How do we keep this updated? If it's a multi-year process, we're going to have to keep this updated, probably address it.
So we're going to have to continue to do that. I think at the heart of this is what Shane always, sorry, Dr. Spiller talks about all the time, which is, or Regent Spiller, is that the key to this and moving it forward and having more money to take care of what you just described is to tackle enrollment and retention. I mean, those are the two at this point that are the most important things on this campus. And I sat with the deans for 2 hours yesterday and talked about enrollment and retention. We understand that. And we understand that taking care of the students and making them successful is how we will be able to move this institution forward in all of those matters.
Can
Kenny. So I'm actually a bit proud of the work that's gone into this. We had to pause because of the distraction of a global pandemic, but as soon as we were able, restarting the process and thinking about how it is we engaged in addressing these issues, some of which are, I don't typically like to use that word, but egregious, and that we moved 10% of our faculty and staff up to minimum is a pretty heavy lift in a single year. But we didn't get here overnight, number one. This is not a WKU issue. This is a national higher education issue and a national labor market issue. And the last is higher education, particularly for faculty, is truly a national labor market. For us to be successful at recruiting faculty, we have to compete not with local institutions. We compete against institutions across the United States. And so that's one of the other drivers of that compression and inversion, particularly for junior faculty members, and then also in particular fields. And so the work ahead really is around disaggregating these data, particularly on the faculty side, within disciplines and within certain areas. It also is going to require us to decide how we allocate the scarce resources that we've carved out in the next budget. There's a reason we didn't commit to the 2% salary increase being deployed in a particular way. Because we're going to work on that during the next several months. We'll have some time, assuming that you all pass that in the budget, before a January 1 implementation date. And that gives us both flexibility, but more importantly, the ability to be strategic. And one of the things that we should be proud of is that we address this head on. We know there's an issue. I will tell you, I was in a meeting yesterday with the presidents of universities from across the Commonwealth. We are ahead of most of them in terms of addressing the issue with the data in hand and not just trying to figure it out ourselves, but really using expertise to shape the conversation. And so much more work to do. But this combined with the budget model and increased retention and recruitment and enrollment puts us exactly where we need to be in the next several years to address this. I'm not going to say fix because it's a structural issue. But we can address it, and we can do better. And again, that was our commitment from the start, and I think we've made good progress, and we're going to continue to do that. Yeah, real quick, I'm sorry.
Sure. No, that's okay.
I agree 100% with what the president said. I do think, though, Jason, sorry, Vice Chair, Chairman, whatever. You know, when you get to know people, you have
yes, sir.
The issue that I have, and I want to make sure everybody, I really think that this issue, the work in this compression study, is completely different than the cost of living issue. That was something that really wasn't intended, to my knowledge, wasn't intended to be addressed in this. We had the unfortunate issue that came up over the last year and a half or so, where inflation continued to rise at a disproportionate rate than it had in a long time. So I feel like those are two separate things. I don't think we can begin to address, or we shouldn't, in my opinion, address inflation in an activity like this. Like you say, it's impossible to keep up. We're already out of date. So, but I do agree that we're ahead of other universities in using data to relieve these issues. I do think it's a multi-year process. I do think, though, that there is another issue related to inflation that we should probably address. Thanks.
I guess we'll go to the budget update.
Okay, so today we're going to cover. I'm sorry, I'm my slides are getting a bit messed up. So, I swear I did not move that.
I've moved it back.
Oh, okay. Sorry if I'm worried. So, we're going to cover an executive summary today of the budget, talk a little bit about RAMP and the Axiom budgeting software, some revenue highlights, expenditure highlights, and subvention and budget alignment strategies, and then next steps. And so I want to first start by saying is that the budget that we're going to present today is pretty much what you will see in June. It's just going to be very tweaking of some data, but the bottom line should, if it changes at all, I will be surprised. So as the provost and the deans know, we've locked the budget down. So so on to the executive summary. So just to remind you of a few campus highlights during the current fiscal year. So as you all remember, the first year village with the Living Learning Community opened in the fall. The Commons at Helm Library opened April, a couple of weeks ago, and it's a beautiful facility. If you haven't been there, I suggest you go see it. It's filled with students and faculty and staff, and it's just very much worth the wait. And also a reminder that we did experience record fall to spring retention for our first year students of 90.9%. And wanted to talk a little bit about our budget priorities for the 23 budget. So first and foremost, keeping college affordable for our students. As we just discussed, keeping faculty and staff compensation at a very high priority. The subvention pool, which is administered by the provost to support investment in our academic colleges. Funding for underrepresented minority hires. A strategic initiative fund that is primarily administered by the president to fund strategic priorities across campus. And again, as we just talked about, the evaluation of record inflationary fixed cost increases in real time over the next year. So this is a snapshot of the overall budget at a high level. So you'll see that our budget that we are proposing for the 23 year is about $383.5 million, which is about a $7.8 million increase or 2% over the prior year. And this is our current budget governance structure. So just to remind you, the OAC is the Operating Allocation Committee. The CAC is the Capital Allocation Committee, and the BEC is the Budget Executive Committee. So you'll see how all of these committees have input into the BEC, along with our campus constituencies, the SGA, the Staff Senate, and the Faculty Senate, and then the BEC will formulate recommendations into campus leadership. What I wanted to just mention is, I think David talked about this, or Regent Brinklick, excuse me.
Either way is fine.
What we plan to do, this is the original structure that Huron recommended to us when we built the RAMP model. The provost and I, along with the president, decided that this structure is a bit clunky and that some of these committees are doing a lot of duplicative work and are kind of overlapping and kind of bumping into each other. So we've decided to actually combine the OAC and the BEC on a trial basis for 2 years and see if it doesn't streamline the process a bit. This will also allow us to get all of the deans represented on the BEC, which is really important in an incentive-based budget model. Right now, the deans are scattered throughout the three committees, the OAC, the CAC, and the BEC. So these were the, after we went through many iterations of going through all these various committees, these were the budget recommendations that were included in the budget that we are bringing to you today. Again, there were a lot of fixed cost increases that were recommended, primarily in facilities and information technology, so you can imagine inflationary and contractual cost within those units. So what we've decided to do, rather than pumping a lot of permanent money into those units, we've decided to evaluate those fixed cost increases throughout the year. The budget office will do that. And what we will do, we don't want to penalize those units for the inflationary increases within, like, utilities and facilities and projects. So we will isolate those into new indexes and monitor the increases throughout the year and then cover those through one-time funds at the end of the year. We've also included the 2% salary pool that we talked about when we were going through the compensation study. There's been no decision, as we said, as to how that's going to be distributed. We're going to turn that over to the combined committee, the new BEC-OAC combined committee, and let that committee formulate a recommendation with leadership during the summer as to how we distribute that. And there were some high-priority positions within admissions in philanthropy that we will cover using the strategic initiative fund. So, going to RAMP and the Axiom budgeting software. So, I can say, and I know the president is very happy with this, we are fully implemented into RAMP. It's taken us 5 years.
Four.
But we are fully here.
Who's counting?
Yeah. And as I've shared with some, you could actually go into the Axiom software today, and you will see where the numbers in Axiom tie directly to what you see in your budget document. So I've just got to hats off to Ronaldo and Brian. They've just done I can't tell you over the last year the work that they put into getting this all balanced out and tied out. So extremely proud of them. And as a reminder on how the revenue and expense allocations work in an RCM model, you have revenues that you have direct revenues, and those would be fees that are generated by the academic unit. Say those go 100% back to the academic unit that generated them. Your allocable resources would be tuition and state appropriation. Your expenses, again, you have your direct expenses. Those would be the budgets that the deans have within their units. And then indirect expenses would be your cost pools from your support units. And then your central funding would be your subvention fund. And these are how the allocable revenues are distributed. I like to remind everyone of this. These were the original recommendations from the steering committee when RAMP was first envisioned. And so there could be some tweaking as we go through this model for a couple of years. Right now, the tuition is divided 75% to the unit that generates the credit hours and 25% to the unit of record or where the student is enrolled. So, some schools are at 80-20. Some are at 70-30, so as we run through this model for a couple of years, working with the deans, we may decide to tweak those percentages a bit. State appropriation, again, this was the original recommendation out of the steering committee. 80% goes to instruction, 15% will go to research, and 5% to performance. And the metric that measures performance in this model right now is degrees awarded. These are your indirect expenses, your support unit cost pools, and I like to just, not because facility reports up to my unit, but I just think it's easy to understand. Facilities is allocated out based on net assignable square feet. So you can imagine if a unit is occupying more space, they're going to get more of that cost pool allocated. Moving on to the revenue. So, oops, I'm sorry, guys. So your tuition and fees, you can see that we are a tuition-dependent university. Tuition and fees make up 46% of our budget, $176.5 million. State appropriation is our second largest source of revenue, so $85.7 million, or 22%. Just a little bit about our enrollment and tuition data. So these are our budget assumptions. So those first two bullets are really important and really varied. So let me just talk about it. We develop our tuition budget based on FTE enrollment. So our FTE enrollment, that's full-time equivalent, is 13,000, almost 14,000, 13,900. Our headcount is what we talk about. That's closer to 17,000. But you can't develop a budget using headcount because headcount will include your high school students, your university employees taking classes that are free. So we have to focus our budget on FTE enrollment. So the first year class that this budget is based on is 2908. We also factored in a 1.2% or 1.19% tuition increase for the fall. And if you remember right, last year the CPE set a two-year tuition cap of 3%. We used about 2% of that in the current year budget, so we have about 1.2 left. And so the CPE will, I'll talk about that in a moment, they will approve tuition rates in June. So to that first budget priority, keeping college affordable for our students, so our three-year average tuition increase has only been 1.06%. That's remarkable. State appropriation, so I just have to say, basically, first, thank you to our legislators. This was just a phenomenal state budget for our state and higher education. And kudos to Dr. Caboni and to Jennifer Smith for their work in Frankfurt. They did a great job this year lobbying for WKU and higher education in general. So the total performance funding pool increased by $80 million across the state. That's just phenomenal. And our portion of that was $6.4 million. A $1 million increase to the Kentucky Mezzanet. And then LifeWorks at WKU received a one-time allocation of $2.8 million, which can be used over multiple years. So you'll see the chart there on the side, the breakdown of our state appropriation. On the capital side, I know Dean Shook is thrilled about this. He has a new allocation in the second year of the biennium to build a new Gordon Ford College of Business. And the other part that's phenomenal for our campus is the asset preservation pool, which is $34 million per year, and that will be matched 15 cents on the dollar. On the expense side, where we were a tuition and fee dependent on the revenue side, we are certainly salary and wage makes up 48% of our expenditure. Financial aid of $107 million, that also includes our federal financial aid, our Pell aid, and our operating budget is about $93 million. Personnel, as we talked about, the 2% salary pool that's included in this budget, again, not to be repetitive, but the distribution methodology will be decided over the summer. And also another important part of our state budget is that it has continued the KDRS subsidy of $3.6 million. The subsidy will be reduced, however, 10% per year. Is it over the next 5 years? Something like that, yeah. So you'll see our personnel budget for the 23 fiscal year is about $183 million. Just to give you a flavor of our fringe benefit rates, and the big one that is highlighted there is the KERS contribution of 75%. The good news is that new folks coming in to the KERS system and aren't charged the 75%, but are charged the more normal 12 to 15%. Financial aid. This budget, the 23 budget, represents the third class of students that are eligible for the expanded scholarship model. And this will be the second year of the WKU family, the Hilltopper Guarantee, and the Border State Scholarship. So there was a $7 million increase to financial aid included in the 23 budget. I know that's a lot of money, and I know we've had a lot of discussion with our deans and provost about that, but I think it's just very, very important to recognize that without this scholarship program, our entering class would probably, if you remember, I said it was 2,900 or thereabouts, it would be more like 2,000. So we would be 900 students off had it not been for this scholarship program. This is a breakdown of our operating expenses. You'll see that operating expenses has gone down, and it's not that it's really gone down by $8 million. It's just that in prior year budgets, all of the grants and contracts budgets were put into operating expenses, and the budget office this year actually broke those grant budgets down to where they were appropriately budgeted. So they went into personnel and operating. So you see the large reduction from operating that went into personnel. Also, you see travel going up by about $800,000. That's not really our campus traveling more. What this is this a reflection of the new budgeting software where the budget managers and the deans have the opportunity to go in and actually look at their budgets and move money around to more accurately align with where they're spending. So just a few slides on subvention and budget alignment strategies. So participation fee and ramp, it's a 13% participation fee. The 13% is on tuition and state appropriation only. And that generates about $32 million in a subvention pool. Off the top of that subvention pool, you have to cover the expenses of your support units, your auxiliary and your support units. That takes about $20 million. That leaves the provost with about $12 million to help balance the colleges and for some strategic priorities. The other budget alignment strategy that we're doing this year, we are going to use $2.8 million in cash over a three-year period to help the subvention pool and help reward units that have done good work over the last 3 years, and then help subvent some of the other schools that still have some work to do. And I just think it's really important as we talk about cash. So to remind the board, we have about $130 million of cash we're carrying. That represents about 174 days of cash on hand. So Moody's, basically, their standard for credit ratings is that a university needs to have 110 days of cash on hand. So we're well above that. So not only are we going to use just a very little bit to help, we thought, what better strategic priority than help our academic units? So we're taking a little of that. We'll probably take a little, we're going to, after the first of the year, look at some short-term investment practices so we can put our money to work. And this also shows you, this graph, I think it really, our cash probably about 5 years ago was about 60, 65 million less than what we have today. So that's just great work by the campus to basically, when your cash is growing like that, that says that you're actually spending less than you're bringing in. So next steps. So the final performance funding distribution, we already received that from the state. And so the fear, always the fear of a budget person, is that you budget it more than you actually will get at the end of the day. And so we actually ended up getting, everybody, don't get excited, $2,000 more than what we had budgeted. So I told the president and provost not to spend it all in one place, but that's a lot of money. So we already have that step. Fine-tuning of the budget details, which I told you we'll do over the next month, which I don't expect the bottom line to change. We'll bring the budget, the final budget, here for your final approval at the specially called meeting in June. The CPE will then officially approve the tuition rate at their June meeting. And, yes, I can finally say with certainty we will take the Axiom data and load it into Banner to start the new fiscal year. So, questions?
I have a few. First, going back to this number of days of cash on hand and $930 million. Well, actually, let me go first and say, given where we were a year ago, this is tremendous progress. I remember the May meeting a year ago, and you might remember I was a little confused as to what the hurdles were with Axiom, what the hurdles were with RAMP, and how we can move forward. And we, to get to a year and see where we are now, tremendous progress. As I've expressed to other faculty, is it, to please sit through this presentation and see, we're going to be able to make much more innovative decisions moving forward because we actually know what we have and where we're going. But with that said, what I'm concerned about is I've already been talking about salaries, but I'm going to go to a different group of our population. We know we got inflation. We know food inflation in the area is over 20-30%. We know housing inflation in this area is rampant. And I'm not just talking about houses themselves. I'm talking about apartment rent, which has gone up 25-30% in the region. I am tremendously concerned about some of our staff and even a few faculty having food scarcity and housing scarcity as we move forward. If you look at someone making $30,000 a year, or to 35 as we're advertising for one brand new position right now, and we're doing maybe 1.5-2% COLA, we have inflation that's, even discounting energy, is running at a way that is not sustainable. You know, the city is giving an 8-10% raise, they're matching on COLA. How do I go back to those faculty and staff who are dealing with that kind of scarcity and say, it's all okay, we've got more cash on hand? I'm struggling with that. So if you could speak to our cash management strategy, that would help me some.
I do think it's important to remember the difference between one-time dollars and recurring dollars. The budget, and we all know this, is to spend one-time dollars on recurring expenses. Because once you spend them, they're gone. Cash on hand is a great tool for stability. And it demonstrates that we were well under where the rating agencies were, and now we are at a place where we're over it. But it is not these are not resources that you can spend on recurring expenses. What you can do is use them strategically to smooth and to essentially work through challenges the institution will have. I'm as concerned as anyone about inflation. This is a national problem. We're feeling it locally. I will tell you, I think that our sister institutions are in the same range that we are for the salary increases that they are considering. And, we have talked about being conservative fiscally. And if you haven't seen anything during my tenure, it's that we have buckled down and created at least budgetary stability to a place where we're able to regularly do a couple percent, 2-3% increase a year. That's not going to address the issue of inflation. And so what we have to do is, while we're conservative, when we overperform and generate recurring revenue, tuition dollars in particular, we need to make the decision about if enrollment next fall is not 29 in the first year class, but is 30 or 31, that additional revenue becomes a decision point for us. And is there a way for us to perhaps increase, with board approval, that 2% pool? And we've had conversations with the leadership group. I've had conversations with Backman Staff Region that would be an appropriate way to use any additional revenue. So I'm as concerned as you are. You saw a 50 percentage point basis increase yesterday from the Federal Reserve. We're likely to have two more of those baked into the market. I am not sure, as I'm not sure anyone is sure, about what happens with inflation. It seems more permanent than folks were hoping. There were some signals yesterday in the Fed call that suggest there may be a bit of a pulling back into the fall. But we have to watch it. We have to watch carefully. And this is a challenge that again, as an industry, we're facing. At the end of the day, I am desperately concerned. It's one of the reasons we made the move to get those folks who are below minimum up above the minimum, around those who are least well compensated. We have to work there. And I think the work we did on minimums this year will continue into next year. I agree.
I think it's impressive we've increased our cash while holding tuition at an average of 1% increases. And while I've advocated for that over the last few years, I have to probably look at tuition increases much higher than 1% a year over the next few years.
So we will begin those conversations. I do think it's not like the university also is not affected by this inflation, right? All the fixed cost increases will go up. We have to do it in a way that doesn't balance our budget on the backs of students. A 1% annual increase that is 5 or 10% below where inflation is running is not sustainable. It will eat up any progress that we've made. I think the other thing that we have to be very transparent about is that $7 million allocation is a discount strategy, right? And so what you see is the scholarship program really beginning to do what it was designed to do. And the budget model also beginning what it was designed to do. And so, you know, there's putting a new budget model in place, number one, is difficult in the first, just to do, technically. And I'm proud that we're at a place where we're not emailing one another Excel spreadsheets deciding what to do. We actually have a tool that allows us to do multi-year forecasting. Right, so that is a tremendous improvement over where we were for our financial and fiscal management. But the other is that this is a culture change for our institution. Not just the transparency, the advance notice that we've given to the board, but the taking the black box and opening it up for our deans and for leadership. We have had tremendous conversations, and really for the first time in 5 years, where the deans, because they are, quote-unquote, paying for the operations of enrollment management, sat down and said, look, how are we a part of this solution? And the flip side is the case as well. What are the services we're getting from you? Because we're paying essentially for your operations. I have been impressed about the collaboration, the cooperation across the colleges and with the auxiliary and support units. That will continue to increase, getting out of our silos and partnering, working together. I think the other is, while there is some work to do, faculty and staff within the academic unit should know they're going to have some flexibility that has not existed before. So the dean of the College of Business is going to have about an $800,000 pool of dollars to allocate within the college how he sees fit for strategies within the college, short-term and long-term. College of Education has about a $500,000 pool. Potter College has an $800,000 pool to do the same with. Now, Dean Brower is not with us today. I will argue. Oh, is he? Other Dean Brower.
Dean
Terrence Brown is not, sorry, is not with us today. I think one of the questions, and you heard this through the talk about how it is these dollars are allocated, our College of Arts and Letters is in really good shape because of the bulk of Colonnade courses that they teach. And so they're going to have some resources. They have some difficult work ahead. And then Dean Basta and the other Dean Brown, they are not rewarded this year, but they've made good progress. And what happens in the next couple of years is they also pop up above that line and have resources for deans to decide how to allocate. And so when you think about what this does, it creates 5 academic enterprises that are run on their own, with decisions being made about the students and retention closer to the students and with the faculty. And so I'm really proud of where this has gotten us. This will evolve over time, but it is transformative for how we run this university. And there are headwinds, but I don't want to lose sight of, we talked about this 4 years ago, and in 4 years, look at what we've accomplished. And that's the thing to celebrate today.
Sorry, I hate to take that, but I don't mind. You know, we had our budget meetings, and I want to stress the full board. Jan was in the one with me. It was a tremendous amount of information. It was good information. The information we've been given as a board was probably the best, most comprehensive list of data that we've been given, and the acknowledgement that I want to also provide is that moving the grant people, and I'm someone that has several grant-funded positions, over to the pool where they belong with the assistance of the new software and whatever mechanisms were put in place, I think is a tremendous asset because it gives a more complete picture as to what the university spends on personnel, moving that out of operate. So all of these are good moves. All of it's a good move. Also, we realize and recognize the tremendous change in net position, not I shouldn't say net position, in the overall cash position, in the structure based on the revenue model related to tuition and all of that. It has been a tremendous challenge. The pandemic didn't help that. It was something that was that a lot of people on this campus, a lot of people in this room, besides me and everybody else, have spent enormous hours beyond the 37 and a half or 50, as we like to call it, if you're on salary, beyond what we would normally do. All that being said, the thing I didn't have time to ask because it didn't really hit me until I left the other meeting, and I hate to do it in open forum, but I need to because enough people have walked up to me. Can we take? I guess the phrase that troubled me is we want to invest some of the cash on hand to get a return financially. I'm assuming that's in non-personnel assets, so like a note or some bank investment that would return 3%, 4%, 5% over a short-term period, some acknowledged return. You know, what if we took $4 million, $4.5 million, $3 million, $3.5 million, pick a number, you all are great at that, and invested that in a one-time relief for cost of living? Because, you know, I have people continuously, and I mean over the last few days, they know a board meeting's coming. They walk up and they voice the same concerns. My rent's gone up 20%. Groceries are up 10%. I can't buy things. And it's not that they need to change their lifestyle. It's that if we are in a position, would this not be a good strategic investment? I'm the third regent that has mentioned cost of living as a concern today. And I think that's fair for this board to address. Now, does that mean everybody on this campus? No, maybe it's just people below 75,000, 60,000, pick a number. But I am extremely worried about us filling positions. And I'm not going to point to the number of vacant positions in, say, an area like admissions and use that as a flag of saying, why are those vacant? But I could. And these are things that concern me in the short term. I agree. The Fed raised the rate. I think that's going to have an enormous impact if they raise it another 0.5% in 6 months or a year, another 0.5% after that. But I think those are fair to help get inflation under control based on my limited knowledge. But I am concerned and would respectfully ask that in the looking at this budget, and I realize that you all have locked it, if that was the term that was used, I just think a one-time investment, to some degree, at some level, in some of the lowest paid people on this campus might be beneficial. I normally would never ask for one time. I agree with the president. I don't agree with using one time money to fix salary problems, but I am extremely concerned about cost of living for this year. It's something that none of us caused, but we may be able to fix it.
I think that, David, that's a great point. And when you think about cash management strategies, we've not ever done this before as an institution, but we're going to. Think about $100 million of cash on hand. Given where interest rates are heading, putting that in a CD market type of account that would generate a small percentage return would allow you to leverage that to create additional revenue that you could then allocate. That doesn't touch the corpus even. And so I do think it's a great idea. It's a conversation for the BEC to have. I don't think we're going to make that decision today. I don't think that's a board-level decision. I think that's a university decision. And I will now turn to Susan and Bud and say, as you all begin your work over the summer, along with the deans and representatives from all of our shared governance groups, put that into the conversation. I think it makes perfect sense. And I Richard Brickley, I appreciate the thought and the creativity you had floated this idea with us individually, and I do think it's something that we need to take a look at.
Can I comment? Just, first of all, you made a key statement. This is a university issue. It's not, to me, it's not a board region issue. But as one region, I would say that this is something that as a region I would fully support. And I think would be great for the university to consider.
I'm sorry, George. We represent the university. There's three elected members on this board. We are not doing our job if we don't bring concerns to this body.
This is great. I think
I just want to say I do think it's a university or a board issue when it gets to the level that it has. And that's okay. I mean, we can agree to disagree on that.
I understand your point. I just
three elected members.
You three, but you represent the university.
Right.
And I'm a regent, not a representative. I'm not employed by the university. And all I'm saying is that when you get down to this level, this is a business decision. This is a management decision. It's a leadership decision at the university level. And if you take non-university employees into that, you're going to take us into a whole bunch of other things, and we should never be running the university. That's the only point I'm making. I really think there's a separation of powers here. And I wanted you all to know that from my perspective, I think it's a great idea that you came up with. I'm glad the university would consider it. I think it would be great, but I don't ever want the Board of Regents to get into running the university. That's the point.
I hope I didn't give the illusion that I was suggesting that, because I think we've established that in previous meetings where I've been called on that, and I totally understand the difference. But also, I think maybe had the regents been a little more effective in another state institution, the legislature might not have had to bail them out. We're not in that position. We're not going to be in that position. But it's fair for us to raise concerns from the positions that we have.
And that's why I want to support you as a regent in that decision.
One should be gracious and accepting support wherever it comes from. Whatever
matters. Thank you. And that concludes the finance and budget.
All right.
Well, I want to make a few comments. Looking around the room, there really are not many seats occupied by people who remember how board meetings used to be run. And I appreciate the fact that we can sit here and have substantive discussions and input freely from all members, and I think that is a great way for boards to function, and I certainly appreciate the fact that we have that kind of board today, and I appreciate everyone's input. Also, you know, I think as a board, we recognize that students, staff and faculty are the heartbeat of the university, and we certainly participate in decisions that affect all those groups. One might argue, however, that our greatest responsibility is to maintain our fiduciary duties, and the Finance and Budget Committee, which Chair McKinney has done a fabulous job with over the last few years, has put us in a position with President Caboni's strategic plans that is now stable and sustainable. And without a stable, sustainable university financially, we might not have a university. And there are other boards around the country that are dealing with problems much unlike ours. So kudos to Susan and her team and Chair McKinney and everyone for the difficult work over the last few years. On day one, President Caboni woke up to a $27 million deficit, if I remember correctly. And so the road of the last 5 years has been long, it's been difficult, and at times very painful. And so to be in the position that we're in now and have 174 days of cash on hand is no small achievement and something that we should all celebrate. And again, I'm grateful for everyone's input into that. The new words that I go to sleep with now are, of course, enrollment and retention, which is the answer, as we all know. Now compression and inversion cloud my mind every night. working on those problems. And America's favorite new word, if anyone's looking at front page news these days, is egregious. And I hope that word doesn't get hackneyed around here, because we are working on those salaries and problems. I don't hear any disagreement around this table that we should do that. So that's a good thing, too. I may have spoken too long, but we will, if everyone can hang in there, we have students waiting outside. I think if we can get through the next committee meeting, we'll then take a short break before we go into the executive session. So.